According to the New York Times critic Charles Isherwood, theater for a new audience's production of Shakespeare's Othello blazed across the stage of the Duke Theater last February. That was the good news. The bad news was the theater was already booked for a show to follow, and Othello's run could not be extended. Its life seemed to be destined to be as brief as Desdemona's. But in an unusual move, the company has brought Othello back to the Duke Theater for an even briefer run in hopes of finding a more permanent place for it. And lucky for me, it brings John Douglas Thompson, Othello, and Ned Eisenberg, Iago, to our show today. Welcome.
Hey.
I'm amazed that the two of you can even sit side by side, knowing what I know. Many actors tell me that they don't read their reviews. Were you both aware of what Mr. Isherwood had written in the Times?
I was not. Friends and other associates called me and quoted what was in the paper, but I had not read it. I'd seen the picture, mm-hmm. and that was about it.
And you make it a policy not to read reviews?
Yeah, I try not to, only because I think it can affect what you're doing on stage.
Well, when you get a great review, everybody calls you to congratulate you, and then that's it.
Well, in the old days, at least according to the movies, there was always this cast party at Sardi's, and then people waited for the first edition to come out. Now you can go home, and if you want to read it, you just go online.
Yeah.
But you don't do that.
He called me before it was in print. He called me that night, excited from the train, and said, "Oh my God, you've got to read this."
The critics always seem to have an ideal version of a Shakespeare play in their mind, so they rarely give a new production the kind of a rave that you did receive. Do you think it's because this is, as Mr. Isherwood said, not full of all of the more innovative directorial approaches that we so often see in productions of Othello?
It could be. He must love the aesthetic of it, what the show is and what we've come up with, and Aaron Arbus.
I think it's a real simple, scaled-down production where what's highlighted is the language and the relationships of the characters on stage, which is enough to hold it, so it doesn't need a lot of big production values.
Well, you mentioned your director. This is her first major job, isn't it? First major production. Now, what happens when you're experienced actors and you have a young director who's never done anything this big before? And Shakespeare, of all things.
Well, the tone of the whole thing was very, very smooth. It's like a Zen exercise. We just all did what we do, and it went along clean and easy and pleasurable. It was wonderful.
I don't think you would have known that this was her first time or first experience with Shakespeare. Because in the rehearsals, as Ned was saying, it just really went very smooth, and we all did our work. And she has a really good eye, and she's extremely graceful. And she knows what she's looking at and really helped us get to the point with the language.
And what about these roles? I mean, these are the kinds of roles that actors covet, aren't they?
Yeah.
In your case, Ned, you play a man who is pure evil. Normally, actors will say, I like to find the human side of the character. It's really hard with Iago, isn't it?
Well, yes and no. As I've told people, it depends how you look at things. As I've said to some people, if everybody in the cast of Othello were wearing a swastika, except for Iago, I'd be the hero of the piece, wouldn't I? So it's kind of the way he sees things. I know they've referred to it as an evil that has no reason, or what was the term that Coleridge used? It'll come to me. I keep hearing it. But no, he certainly does have his reasons, and it's a multifaceted, endless, deep reason why he does what he does.
Is this an opportunity to explore your dark side without any consequences?
Yes, I guess one could say that.
have you played Othello before?
Yes, I've played it three times before. And for me, each time I've done the production, it's kind of built on the next one. So I've learned more each time.
I've always wondered about that. You work with a director who does set it, let's say, in modern times, and you're doing a certain concept, and then you do it set in Shakespeare's time, or you do it set, as Orson Welles tried to do it, in some Mediterranean island, probably the Malta or something. Does it? Do you have to make adjustments, or in the end, is the character the same character?
I think, well, obviously you will make adjustments because you're working with different actors. The concept of the production may be different. But I think the essentials of the character always pretty much remain the same. The situation that the character's in remains the same.
In an odd way, this is one of Shakespeare's most successful plays, don't you think?
Yeah. You know, I think it's very simple and it's very domestic. So it's very reachable. So I think that when people see it, you're not looking at kings and queens and noblemen. You're just looking at people in love and relationships. So I think it really resonates for today.
But there's also an interracial aspect to it, which is something that may resonate differently today than it did in other times. There was a time, in fact, when most of the Othellos were played by white actors in blackface.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that probably changed in the 20s or so.
Yeah.
Paul Robeson and some of the
Paul Robeson, Ira Aldridge was one of the first African actors to do it. I tend to think that race doesn't matter in the play as much as it used to, certainly for me. I think it's love that really matters the most and the wrecking or the tearing apart of that love. And that race is there in the play anyways, just because you have an African or a black actor playing the role surrounded by white actors.
Although it's not really, it's not something that comes up in the script. I mean, Shakespeare didn't write about a racial conflict, did he?
Well, it certainly matters to Iago.
Yeah.
Okay. When he uses the word Moor, it's got teeth in it, and these Moors are changeable in their ways, and it certainly does. And the term, I just remembered, it's motiveless malevolence. And
oh,
it's not. Yes, that's the Coleridge term, the motiveless malevolence.
Okay, so we have this production that everybody thinks is great, and it's a hit, and people are lining up to buy tickets. And then Jeffrey Horowitz reports in the Times that show has to close despite all of that. That has to be one of a producer's worst nightmares.
It's a quality problem, one could call it.
A happy problem.
Yes, two hits and no place to put them.
And what about the actors? Had you made plans to do other things? Because this was a limited run.
No, this is taking up all my energy and focus. Don't ask me to do anything else right now till this is done.
So what happened? The play closed. Something else came on, the Duke Theater, and then that closed. And the Duke only had a few days before the next production was to be?
Yeah, I think there's some other contractual commitment with another company or another show that's taking over the space. So once the 24th, which is this Friday, then our show's over. Closed.
Again.
And then, yet again.
you hoping that somebody will find another space for it.
There are producers that are coming to see the show, and hopefully they'll want to do something with it in the future. I guess that's everyone's hope.
It's odd that it's hard to get a theater. I'm hearing that despite the economic downturn, one of the few positive things today is the theater, that actually more people are going this year. And if you look at what's on and off-Broadway, this has to be one of the great seasons. This is reminding me of the kinds of seasons we talk about in the golden age of theater.
There's been a lot of good shows.
Bad times, good theater, they say, right?
It's maybe because people are being forced to just get down to what theater is really all about and not worrying about whether helicopters are descending from the sky and things like that.
Yeah.
In Othello, you don't really have to worry about any of that. This is all about the way people interact with each other.
Yeah, very much so.
Now, Ned, your biography in the Playbill is only a selection of the roles that you played since 2000.
He only gave us 70 words, so I figured, all right, it started the new
century. So do you work a lot, or have you only been in plays with very long titles?
Is that the case? I don't know. What do you got? Not too long a title, right? We have Awake and Sing on there. What else? I don't know what's on the... In the bio.
I'll open it up, but I didn't see any Shakespeare.
Oh, well, I don't do that all that much. With this theater, this is the theater that bestows these kind of roles on me and gives me the opportunity to play them. But I played King John, in King John with the Theater for a New Audience. I got to play in Titus Andronicus with them, the role of Saturninus. That was one of Julie Taymor's early off-Broadway pieces with this theater. So, yeah, I've done some Shakespeare as well.
And you've worked with Julie Taymor, and you also were in The Green Bird, so you worked a lot with puppets.
Well, somewhat, yes, yes, that's correct.
Is Othello the only real... now we're seeing more and more plays which are being produced colorblind, but for a long time, Othello was really the only play that an African-American actor could appear, a Shakespearean play.
Well, there's two others. There were, as far as having an African-American in the cast, I mean, now you have a lot of non-traditional casting because I think you can have that in Shakespeare. But there was The Merchant of Venice, and there's also Titus Andronicus,
yes.
You know, which have very famous popular roles. Aaron the Moor and Prince of Morocco's not so. It's okay, yeah. But it's not so.
It's
but Othello, I think, is of the three characters that Shakespeare wrote, is probably of the highest caliber.
Do you think that the kind of love that Othello and Desdemona have tends to inspire jealousy and invite destruction?
Well,
almost like too hot not to cool down.
I tend to think that we all have, you know, some weaknesses in us, and they can be exploited. And I look at Othello as this epic guy, epic character, you know, almost from a heroic age, almost Homeric, like Beowulf, who's now living in this world that's much smaller than the world that he came from.
But he says he won Desdemona with his stories. Do you ever wonder what those stories might have been?
Yeah, well, you think about some of the things that he says, where he's been, what kind of life he's led. He's led a charmed life. You know, as if he was a Greek god descended down to earth.
And he and Iago have been comrades in arms. They've been together for a long time. You would have thought that they would have shared a kind of band of brothers relationship instead of what they have.
Yes, although it is a superior and an inferior relationship. It is a military relationship. I don't know how long it's been. I don't know that it's been decades. I don't know how long he has been employed by the Venetian state. He could be a new guy on the scene. A lot of these campaigns were in other...
Certainly, I think Othello is kind of a new guy on the scene, but I feel that Iago and Othello have been working together for a little while.
Yes, we've been in battle.
And have created the kind of relationship that you would have from two soldiers being side by side in battle.
Mm-hmm. Although Iago may resent the fact that he's been passed over for promotion, something we've seen more than once in the military. People keep on referring to him as honest Iago throughout the play, but this is a man who deceives and manipulates everyone.
It's true, but he does speak, well, the honest, also he says things maybe that a lot of people don't say. You know, when you say someone's honest, it also means God. Well, that was honest. I wished you hadn't said it. So he has that sort of earthy...
But even his wife, Amelia, doesn't see through him. She's shocked when she realizes what he's done.
Yeah.
And Othello...
Well, she's also, oh, my God. I could have suspected something like this.
Oh, I should have seen it.
I should have seen it. Oh, my God. Yeah.
But all the characters feel that Iago is very honest, so there's no reason for us not to believe that he is not this kind of a man.
Yeah, but Othello, he has a choice. He either trusts his wife or he trusts Iago, and he's very quick to doubt Desdemona.
I beg to differ. I don't think it's that quick. I think if you look at it, if you look at the relationship between Iago and Othello as being a very strong relationship and very good friends, and if you also look at the fact that Othello and Desdemona are newly married, they haven't had really the opportunity to be the couple that they want to be at this point. And also that Othello doesn't really know much about Venetian women, which is what Iago talks to him about. So I submit that this aspect of jealousy is almost an everyman quality. And anybody in that particular situation may have had that same thing happen with an Iago in their lives.
So are you jealous of actors who get into a hit play and actually get to have long runs?
I don't know. Are you? I'm happy for them. I'm really, you know, when I'm happy for us as we have this opportunity, you know.
Yeah.
But I'm never jealous of other actors who get to do this kind of work, which is great.
Are there any rumors of another run?
Yes.
Your lips to God's ears.
Yes. I mean, again, I don't know how they work out the whole business paradigm of how to make money doing this. Or, you know, it's very complicated, supposedly. But that's what they're hoping. That's what they're hoping, certainly.
Have the two of you worked together before? You were up at the Berkshires last summer, but
yeah, I was up at Shakespeare and Company doing another version of it. This is the first time, and I, you know, I have to say that, you know, I've worked with several Iagos and good Iagos, but Ned certainly, I think he takes the cake.
Oh, that's very
kind. He's really wonderful because he really captures a lot of the aspects of Iago, and he's a showman on top of that. So I just think it works well. I think our relationship on stage, because we're very different actors and very different people, but that really solidifies our relationship. Yeah. I think it makes it good, the way we work.
That's what we've heard, yes. Yeah. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. So fill us in again. It's only this run, which is very limited, is only until this Friday?
Yep.
The 24th.
And it's at the Duke Theater on 42nd Street.
Yep. Up to 229 West.
So it's
next to the B.B. King.
Yeah, right.
In the middle of things.
So
You're not in on the 42nd Street Theater row. You're in the middle of the old Booby House, what used to be Raunchy.
That's correct. When I was a kid, that's right. I'm amazed every time I come out
walk
of there
the
what
building.
It has become.
I want to thank the two of you so much for being with us. I've been talking with John Douglas Thompson and Ned Eisenberg, respectively Othello and Iago. Also Dennis Butkus, Kate Forbes, Lucas Hall, Robert Langdon Lloyd, Elizabeth Meadows, Rouse, Christian Rummel. Have I left? Juliet Rylance.
Yes, Desdemona.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you,
sir. Thank you.